The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Now, this year has brought a number of issues in tech giants like Facebook to the surface, and the EU is working to sort them all out. I'm joined now by Dr. Eileen Cullity, Assistant Professor at the School of Communications at DCU, Deputy Director of the Institute for Media Democracy and Society. Good morning, Eileen.
Good morning.
Now, first of all, what are the problems that the EU is trying to address? I mean, are they your problem, my problem, society's problems, the body politics problems?
Well, it's all of those things, because the rules that govern how online companies operate in Europe were defined 20 years ago. So that's back when the web was still new. And at the time, policymakers were keen to encourage the digital economy. And that economy is now dominated by a handful of big tech companies. And there's just a host of problems that stem from that, around data privacy, around disinformation, political advertising, and so many other issues that, you know, we talk about so much in the media. So these are big societal problems, they're economic problems, and they're individual problems for people who might be subject to disinformation or hate speech and so on.
Now, at the moment, if somebody goes online, they can remain anonymous and they can libel you in a way that a newspaper or a broadcaster could not do. And it seems there is no recourse, because the social media platforms say they are simply that, platforms, not publishers. Will that be addressed by the EU?
No, and surprisingly, last year there was a lot of talk about this rule that defined online companies as platforms might be reversed, and that hasn't been. So they're still considered platforms, not publishers. What's really happening is that there are new rules focusing on things like competition in the market, to make sure there is better competition between companies, that anything that is illegal offline will now also definitely be illegal online. And then the other big area is about introducing more accountability and reporting and transparency.
Okay, just to explain maybe in very lay terms how a platform might be different to a publisher. If you've got a news sheet that you produce and you're handing it out free at a railway station, you clearly have published a newspaper, even if it's free, and you're giving it away. If, on the other hand, you look at the hoarding outside the station and you just plaster something on it, that's the platform. And if you don't identify yourself, it's there as a platform. And that's kind of what they're doing digitally, just allowing people to put any old stuff up without recognition of who the poster is.
Yeah, well, one way to think of it is about phone companies. So phone companies are considered platforms. They provide a service, but we don't consider the phone company responsible for the things people say or do when they make a phone call. And 20 years ago, that argument was successfully applied to online companies, and it was felt that it was necessary for online businesses to grow, that they couldn't be held responsible for content. The problem now is that when you think of social media companies, they clearly have a big influence on the content in terms of their algorithms determine what content they see. They have policies and they can ban people. So they are much more like publishers, but I don't think it would be helpful to consider them traditional publishers either. There's something in between the two.
Now, we talk about anonymity and people can sign up to platforms and remain anonymous. And the argument is made that this should always be the case because of whistleblowers couldn't whistleblow freely for fear of retribution, or political dissidents in difficult political situations could not speak out if they could be identified and they get the early morning knock on the door and be arrested and detained and so on. But there does seem to be something unacceptable about people being able to ballyrag ordinary citizens online without any recourse by the victim to retribution.
Exactly. And the anonymity argument is quite a complex one. So as you said, there are very good reasons to maintain anonymity. It's really important. And not just maybe for whistleblowers. If you think of people who might need to seek support or advice in the context of domestic violence, or young people who are exploring their sexual identities and so on. So there's a lot of evidence to suggest that anonymity is really important. The flip side of that is about whether the social media companies are providing any accountability or support to people who are victims of abuse. So we saw during the Euro finals earlier this year, when this torrent of racial abuse was directed at the black British players, the question, and many of those were not by anonymous accounts, the people's identity was readily identified. The issue is that the social media companies should have known in advance that this was likely to happen. They were not detecting racist comments, and they failed to ban and remove racist accounts. So the issue is much more around what the companies are doing to protect their users rather than removing anonymity.
Now, the political sphere clearly was in sharp focus during Trump's first campaign, and he may well have a second, and we also saw it at work in Britain. So the question is, political postings, I mean, they could be just fans of a particular party or fans of a particular cause, but do we have the right to know who is disseminating political information?
Well, absolutely, we should do. In a democracy, that kind of transparency is really important. And this comes back to what you were saying about publishers. So when adverts are put on broadcast media or in newspapers or on billboards, those are publicly available. Whereas what's happening online, and particularly through Facebook and Google, which are essentially advertising companies, is that they allow political actors to micro-targeting, which is to give very personalized adverts to individuals. And there's no transparency around that. So in things like the Brexit campaign, we know that the Vote Leave campaign was targeting messages, often contradictory and false messages, to groups of people. And journalists and researchers and watchdogs were not able to give any scrutiny to that.
So the EU getting tough on the tech companies might be too strong a word. What are they going to do? What sort of regulation are they going to introduce?
Well, say, for example, on that issue of political advertising, there's a proposal to ban kind of targeted personalized advertising, but only in certain categories. So it's not a complete ban. And they will force the tech companies to provide more transparency, but only to the users. So if you see a political ad, it will have to be clearly labeled. It will have to explain why it was targeted at you. But campaigners would like something that goes much further, which is that any political ad should be in an archive that's readily available in real time, so that journalists can do their scrutiny, and that, you know, watchdogs and researchers and electoral commissions, which we're supposed to get in Ireland, can actually monitor what's happening. So the rules don't quite seem to go far enough there.
So is it to do with paid stuff rather than, you know, someone just spouting off their own political view, which might support one or other party or cause?
Yes, it would only apply to paid adverts, not to people posting things. A politician can post things on their personal social media account. It wouldn't apply to that.
All right. How much of a role, finally, Eileen, will the Irish regulator have in enforcing all of this, or will each country enforce these new rules independently?
No, the Irish regulator will have a major role, because the EU operates what's called a country of origin principle. So that means that a company like a Facebook or Google might operate across the EU, but they're subject to the laws in the country in which they're based. And so Google, Facebook, Microsoft and others all have their headquarters here. So Ireland would be the lead regulator. And that's raised a lot of concerns by other European countries and by many privacy and rights campaigners about whether Ireland has the capacity or the political will to actually do this.
Yeah, because obviously the tech companies are good for our economy, and we might go softly, softly on them, is the suspicion in those other countries. But also, do we have the resources to police what's going on in Belgium or wherever? You know, we may not have.
Yeah, the resourcing is a big issue. We can see this already with the Irish Data Protection Commissioner, which is in the same situation. But it's more than just resourcing. It is also about whether there's the will to actually make judgments against the tech companies. And so far, the Irish Data Protection Commissioner has generally failed to do that, and the vast majority of its cases have not been progressed.
Dr. Eileen Cullity, Assistant Professor in the School of Communications at DCU, Deputy Director of the Institute for Media, Democracy and Society, thank you very much for joining us.